Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Irvin Daf Yud Zayin. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in contact with us, our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur from the second line of daf Yud Zayin. Before we begin the shiur, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading. In this case, we're calling it a tat nosei, meaning a subtopic. Be'inyan hekif Ro'u'ah, regarding the topic we are currently discussing in the Gemara, and that is an enclosure that is called a weak type enclosure. Namely, it is a fence made of one directional material, namely either something horizontal or something vertical, as opposed to a latticework type enclosure. So that is called a Hekif Ru'ah, which we say is Shti or Orev. Shti meaning upright, Orev meaning horizontal. Hekif Zayin L'Shlosh Anoshim Umutr. We're going to talk about an enclosed area of 7 Se'ah. A base Se'ah is an area measuring 50 by 50 Amos. So we're going to talk about an area that's 7 times that, and you are enclosing it for the benefit of 3 people, and it's considered a kosher enclosure. We're also going to talk about a hekif chamesh, that's 5 se'ah enclosed l'shlosha for 3 people, l'shlosha noshim, the osur, and it being unacceptable. So that, on the surface, would seem to be perplexing. As we have already learned, the larger the enclosure, the more problematic it will be. And here we're describing a larger enclosure being allowed and a smaller enclosure being prohibited. The ideas that we're mentioning right now are coming on the heels of that which we discussed at the end of our previous shiur. So it naturally would be of value to be familiar with that which we discussed in our previous shiur. We continue in the Gemara itself. Omar Rav Gidol, Omar Rav. Shlosha, 3 people. B'chamesh, asurim b'sheva mutorin. At times, an enclosure of 5 saw for those 3 people will be prohibited, but an enclosure, a larger enclosure, of 7 saw will be allowed. Omru lay. So they turned to Rav Gidol and asked him, Rav Gidol, who quoted Rav, and they asked him, Omar Rav Hochi, did Rav say thusly? Omar Lahu, and Rav Gidol answered with an expression of oath. He said, O Raisa Neviyu Ksivi, by the Torah, Neviim, the prophets, and the Ksuvim, the writings, the Omar Rav Hochi, he certainly said thusly. Omar Rav Ashi, my Kashya, Rav Ashi, why is this perplexing? There's a simple explanation. Dilma hochi ka'omar. Maybe it's to be understood thusly. Hutzrichu l'sheish, if the 3 people needed an enclosure of 6, they would use 6 of the 7 beisah. Per person, we know from our previous Gemara that a person is entitled to 2 beisah. So if a person is entitled to 2 beisah, 3 people would be entitled to 6 beisah. Assuming here that they need that area, they need to use 6 of the beisah, the hikifu b'sheva, and they enclosed a slightly larger area, 1 sa'ah more, afilu b'sheva mutarim, they are allowed to use that area that's enclosed, the 7 sa'ah that are enclosed. Lo hutzruchu elo l'shalosh, imagine you have 3 people, but all they need for their Shabbos use is a total of 3 sa'ah. V'hekifu b'chamesh, and they enclosed 2 sa'ah more than they need, asurim. That kind of enclosure, being that it has 2 base sa'ah more than they need, is unacceptable. Mechitzos, where there is two beisah more than they need, and this is something we learned in our previous shiur, that kind of enclosure is unacceptable. The Gemara asks, Velaha dekotoni, this that was taught in the Tanaic source, we have this referred to earlier, there's an arrow noticed to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, you can see where this quote comes from on Tesayin Omid Beis, Ubilvad shelo yehe beis sosayim ponui, that an enclosure is allowed provided you don't have two unused beisah, my lav, ponui me adam. Does that not mean vacant from people, people-wise? In other words, if you have three people, that entitles them to not only to your basic two saw, but you can enclose an area up till eight, up till not including eight beisah. Because if you were to enclose for three people eight full beisah, then you'll have this situation. But up till that amount, it should be okay. So if you say that what is objected to is two beisah ponui me odam, vacant from people, as we describe, where you break down the enclosed area per person, there should be nothing wrong with an enclosed area of five. They're allowed to have up till eight. The Gemara says, lo, that's not the intention of the source when it says beis sosayim ponui. Rather, ponui mikelim, it means unused vis-a-vis vessels. That regardless of the number of people, even three people, if you have an unused area where they're not keeping anything, there are no vessels there, that is what we object to. So that in a case of three people and five are enclosed and all they need is three, you have three enclosed, that's all they need, and two beisah are not used at all, that is what the source says is unkosher, unacceptable for a Shabbos enclosure. And now the Gemara has a totally new discussion. And before we learn the Gemara, let's just glance at the side under our Nosei heading. Hekef, or an Eruv, enclosure or a joining together of domains, Shoyu Ksherim B'Knisis HaShabbos V'Nifsalu, that it was things were set up properly in an acceptable fashion, acceptable terms at the entrance of Shabbos. When Shabbos entered, things were fine. And then in the course of Shabbos, something went awry. Machloikis, there will be a machloikis in the Gemara. Shabbos goremes o diurin goremim. Is it Shabbos that literally causes things to be either kosher or unkosher? Or is it the status of the dwellers that is the determining factor? If this sounds a little vague, it will become much clearer by the Gemara's examples. Itmar, shloisha, umeis echol mehem. Three people had been together, and they enclosed an area of more than two beisah. Now, as we've learned up till now, if you have three people, so technically speaking, you can have more than two beisah enclosed. If there are two people, one or two people, then we restrict the enclosure to the area of two beisah, an area measuring 50 by 100 amos. So you have an enclosed area starting off with three people, and as we said, the enclosure was more than two beisah. Umeis echad mehem, and in the course of Shabbos, one of the three people died. Shnayim, an enclosure of more than two beisah was made improperly. Here, an improper enclosure was made. V'nisvasfu aleihem, and in the course of Shabbos, someone else came along to where they were. So in the first example, you have something that was made at the beginning of Shabbos. It seemed kosher, and in the course of Shabbos, something went bad. And in the second example, it started off as no good, and in the course of Shabbos, things got better. How do you establish or determine things? How do you determine the situation in the course in the middle of Shabbos? Rav Huna v'Rabbi Yitzchok. Chan omar Shabbos goremes v'chan omar diurin gormen. So you have two opinions, taking both, each one taking one of the two possibilities. If you say that Shabbos is the causing factor, then you determine things as it was at the entrance of Shabbos. If that be the case, so that in the first case it will remain kosher, and the second case it will not be acceptable. And the opposite is true if you say diurin gormin. And in the first case, since in the middle of Shabbos the dweller aspect went bad, so it will become unfit, even though at the point Shabbos entered, things were kosher. And the opposite in the second case. The Gemara continues, Tistayim de Rav Huna hu de Omar Shabbos goremes. Let's conclude of the two names that we had. It wasn't clear up till now who held what. So let's conclude that Rav Huna is of the opinion that Shabbos is the cause factor. De Omar Rabo. Rabo tells us a story. Boi me Rav Huna, uboi me Rav Yehuda. I had asked my mentors, I'd asked of Rav Huna and of Rav Yehuda, a question. Now, this question will be appreciated if you look at your Pirush Chai diagram 240. You'll find that on page 37. What you see is two chatzeros that are enclosed with a passageway marked bays to go from one chotzer to the other. A chotzer is a courtyard, and as we've learned in the past, one is not allowed to carry from one courtyard to another unless an Eruv Chatzeros was made, a method of joining together two private domains. So, an Eruv was made, Derech HaPesach. In other words, in anticipation of carrying through that opening that you can see marked bays between the two Chatzeros. V'nistam HaPesach, and in the course of Shabbos, the wall from above crumbled, and the debris sealed the passageway. That's illustrated in 241. Similarly, Derech HaChalon, there's a case is illustrated in 243. There was a window that measured 4 by 4 tfachim, which can be considered a transit point between the two chatzeros, and they made their Eruv, assuming that that's how they would move from one chotzer to the other, v'nistam achalon, and something similar as we saw in 241 happened there in picture 243. Mahu, what is the din? Can they carry from one chotzer to another some other way, or by the fact that the a formal passageway got sealed up, that ruins their Eruv? So that was the question. The Omar Li and Rav Huna answered, and here we have to emphasize the name because that's the whole point of this section. He answered, Shabbos, Hoyo the Hutra. Hutra, Shabbos, since at the beginning it was Mutter, it remains Mutter for all of Shabbos. Tistayim. So this is conclusive. So the point that we started a few lines ago, where the Gemara said, Tistayim de Rav Huna, let us conclude that Rav Huna is the one that said Shabbos is the causing factor. We see that is, in fact, Rav Huna's position. Lema Rav Huna of Rav Yitzchok. Now, here we're starting a long question. Note that fact by the marking. And after the long question, the Gemara will have an answer, a response that also lasts a number of lines. So the Gemara asks, Lema Rav Huna of Rav Yitzchok, Beplukta de Rav Yosi v'Rebbe Yehuda Komifligi. Can we align the machlokes amoroyim that we just saw with the following machlokes tanoyim? Disnan, and a Tanaic source follows, in which you find Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi arguing. Chotzer shenifritza mishtei ruchoseha. This is illustrated in picture or illustration 244 in the Pirush Chai. A chotzer whose wall broke from two sides. In the picture you can see it's illustrated a the wall broke at the corner. V'chein bayis shenifratz mishtei ruchoisav. Likewise with a house. V'chein movui shenitlu korosav olechoyav, or an alleyway whose crossbeam or upright pole got removed on Shabbos. So that you have these areas that at the entrance of Shabbos things were kosher, but in the course of Shabbos the enclosure became problematic, or you'll say was ruined. Mutaron la'osid Shabbos v'asurin la'osid lavo. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. As far as that Shabbos is concerned, they can continue carrying within those enclosed areas, because at the entrance of Shabbos they had been enclosed properly. As far as next week is concerned, they'll either have to fix things or not be able to carry. So this reflects the idea of Shabbos, hoyel v'hutra hutra, that it depends on how things were at the entrance of that Shabbos. Rabbi Yosi Oimer, im mutarin la'oise Shabbos, mutarin la'osid lavo, v'masurin la'osid lavo, asurin la'oise Shabbos. Let's start from the end. Rabbi Yosi says if they're not going to be allowed next week, they're not allowed this Shabbos either, from the point that things went bad. So essentially, Rabbi Yosi is saying, we could translate what he says, but the point is that if it's not good in the future, it's not good now either. The words are, if it's mutter for that Shabbos, it's mutter for the next week. But really, you shouldn't stop at that point. That's why we read the two lines together, because what he's really wants to emphasize is that if it's not good next week, like you just said, it's not going to be good even for the balance of this Shabbos. And from this, you would see that Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that we don't say Hoyo v'hutra hutra. So Lema Rav Huna Diomar Rabbi Yehuda, should we then align? Rav Huna, who we saw above in our long point, he held that you base things on the beginning of Shabbos, and he would seem to parallel Rabbi Yehuda in this source. But Rabbi Yitzchak Diomar Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yitzchak, who argued with Rav Huna, would then parallel Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara says not so. This is a We opened up this section of the Gemara with a question. Can we say they parallel like we did? The Gemara says no. Omar loch Rav Huna. Rav Huna, that we saw above in the case of the enclosure, Ano di Amri afilu l'Rav Yosi. I can conform or fit into the opinion of Rav Yosi as well. In other words, my opinion is something that Rav Yosi would agree with. Ad kan lo ko'omar Rabbi Yosi. Up till now, Rabbi Yosi said that it would be forbidden, even that very same Shabbos, Hossam, in the Tanaic source that we saw, elo de lesnu lemechitzos, because the walls are not there. What can you do? The wall right now is not there, so you can't carry within that area on Shabbos. So that even though it might have started off as okay, but right now, in the middle of Shabbos, the wall disappeared. Acha, in my case, isnu lemechitzos, where it was enclosed for three people. It's true, one of them died, but the walls are still there. So Rabbi Yosi could agree with me. Rabbi Yitzchak Omar, ano di amri afilu Rabbi Yehuda. What I said is something that even Rabbi Yehuda could agree with. It's true that in the Tanaic source, Rabbi Yehuda was lenient. Ad kan lo kom Rabbi Yehuda hasam. Rabbi Yehuda was willing to matir the area that had originally been enclosed. He was matir there. Elo de istu l'diyurim, because the dwellers are there. All the same people that were there at the beginning of Shabbos are there right now. Acha, in my case, that Rabbi Yitzchok had been speaking about, where it was, let's say, started off with enclosed for three, but one of them died. In this case, less than the diurim, the requisite number of dwellers are not there. So after all is said and done, you can see that Rav Huna's major emphasis is placed on the walls, and Rabbi Yitzchok places his emphasis on the dwellers. V'chachomim o Omrim, Echod Mishnei Devarim. The Chachomim that we saw back on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis, they said the wall can serve as a proper enclosure in general, whether it's even if it's one directional, whether it's Shti or Orev. The Gemara asks, well, Hainu Tanakama, what is the final opinion in the Mishnah saying that's any different than the Chachomim that appeared earlier in the Mishnah on Tes Zayin Amud Beis? The Chachomim that appeared, as we say, in the middle of the Mishnah, in our Gemara markings, they were listed with a beis. And there it said, Chachomim Omrim lo dibru b'shara l'bahoyva, the use of the one-directional fence that was stated in the context of the caravan was only because that's a common example. But the one-directional fence is effective even in a non-shayora, a non-caravan situation. So that position and the position of the Chachomim at the end of the Mishnah seem to be one and the same, and yet they're presented as separate opinions. So that is what the Gemara is asking. Why do we have these as presented as separate opinions? The Gemara says, Ika binayu, there is a difference between them. Yochid b'yishuv, a private person, an individual, in a settled area. That will be a point of controversy. Now, how does that work out? So let's look in the Rashi. Rashi, we're looking at is at the lower part of the narrow lines. Ika binayu yochid b'yishuv. The Tanakama de Ko'omar lo dibru b'shara l'bohoiva. The example of Shara was only a common example. Lo'olam yochid nami muter. And an enclosure of a one-directional enclosure will be good also for a non-shayara, for a private person. A Shara, we saw in our Shira and Daf Tes Zayin, could be interchanged with three people. A private person is not excluded by the fact that that reference was made to a shayara. However, yachidumi de shayara, when we speak about a leniency for a private person, the one directional fence being okay for him too, it has to be a private person under circumstances similar to a shayara, to baderech, that he's on the road, for lo bi yishuv, but not a private person near his home. If you're in a settled area, so you have the availability of materials to make a proper mechitza, lattice work type enclosure, a crisscross type fence, as opposed to a one directional fence. So the Tanakama is allowing a one-directional fence for a private person, but only if he is on the road. The Rabbanan Basroi, Amil Seder Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda called Mahadri, the latter opinion of the Rabbanan in the Mishnah that appears after Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, so they are a reaction to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. The Kamar Yehu, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda had said, Eino Mechitza lo baderech v'lo b'yishuv, that it's never, the one-directional fence is never acceptable, not on the road nor in the community. The Amri Le Rabbonon, and the Rabbonon respond to that. They respond to Rabbi Yossi's across the boards restriction with an across the boards leniency. That Echod Mishnei Dvarim, O Shti, when they said Echod Mishnei Dvarim, that's a quote from what they said in the Mishnah, O Shti O Arev equals Mechitzahi, that O Shti Arev, whether it's upright or horizontal, is a good Mechitza, Echod Yochid, Echod Rabin, Bein Baderech, Bein Beyishuv, whether it be a private person or a group of people, whether they're on the road, and we squiggle underline, or whether they're in Beyishuv. And if you compare this comment, Bein B'yishuv, we have a little arrow to the right-hand side of the Rashi text, and you can align that with the arrow just before. There it said, below, we emphasize, below B'yishuv. Here, yes, B'yishuv. So that is the point of difference between the two opinions. In the Mishnah, before we learn the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have written the topic heading, the Nosei, Heterim Miuchodim L'machne Tzva'i D'Milchemes Rishus, special leniencies that apply to a military camp in the course of a battle that's classified as a Milchemes Rishus. At the end of Maseches Sota, or toward the end of Maseches Sota, there is a classification of different types of battles. there are battles that are called Milchemes Mitzvah, Milchemes Rishus, and in Maseches Sota you even see an expression saying Milchemes Choiva. In our Gemara, we're going to make reference to Milchemes Rishus, and Rashi's definition over here of a Milchemes Rishus is Stam Milchemes Rishus is Mi Milchemes Yeshuv Eilech. Any battles that the Jewish people waged after the initial conquering of the land of Israel, the conquering of the land of Israel was a Milchemes Mitzvah, that was God commanded. So any battles waged after that are called Milchemes Rishus, Shioisa, as opposed to the Milchemes Yeshua, which was Shioisa Milchemes Mitzvah. That was the Milchemes Mitzvah. This is a very very big topic, or say a major topic of discussion of a contemporary nature, how to classify different milchamas, different battles, and there are many halachas that apply to the different classifications. So the different sources on the topic take on added significance. So in our sugya, if we are going to be learning along with Rashi, so we're going to be referring to those milchamos that are waged that were waged after the conquering of the land. The Gemara, the Mishnah, Arba Dvorim Potru B'machaneh. There are four exemptions in a military camp. Mevi'im Eitzin Mikol Mokom. They are entitled to gather wood from wherever, and they don't have to worry about the problem of theft. Upturin Mirchitzas Yodayim, and there's an exemption of washing hands. And number three, umidmai, the necessity of tithing produce acquired from ignoramuses, that in general there is a rabbinic expectation to tithe products that you acquire from an ama oretz, not so in the case of a machane, a military encampment, umile arev, and the exemption of making an eruv. The example of the eruv here involves an Eruv Chatzeros, and there is an illustration 247 in the Pirush Chai that might help. Rashi describes it through words. Umilarev, Rashi says, Eruve Chatzeros, Emikifu Elu V'Elu. Imagine you have two military groups that were enclosed. Umechitzo Mafsekes Beinehem. They had set up their own enclosures, one next to the other, and there was a division between these two groups, the Yesham Pesach, and there's a doorway. Generally speaking, that's called two chatzeros that you want to join together. That would be that would necessitate an Eruv chatzeros. So here, Ein Tzrichin La'arev. Since they're in military formation, so they don't have to make an Eruv in order to carry from one enclosure to the other on Shabbos. The Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Machna Yoitzis L'Milchemes HaRashus, a military camp going into a Milchemes Rashus, into battle form. And again, if we're going to learn with Rashi, it means basically any battle other than the battles for the conquest of the land. So Mutorin B'Gezel Eitzim Yuvashim, they are entitled to collect wood, dried wood, and certainly fresh wood, and there is no problem of gezel. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema Omer, af chinin b'chol mokayim. They are entitled to camp, set down camp anywhere they like. Uve mokayim shenergu shom nikborim, and where a soldier is killed, they are buried in that spot. The Gemara now goes over some of these points. Mutorin begezel eitzim yeveshim. The Gemara asks, why do you associate this allowance, this permission, with a military encampment? Hai takanta di Yeshua have. This is an ancient ruling, an ancient takona that goes back in time to Yehoshua. And the Ritva explains that being that it's a takon of Yeshua, it applies to everybody. Why the emphasis on a military group? The Omar Mor, it was said in Maseches Bava Kama, this source comes from there, Asor Tnoyim Isno Yeshua, 10 conditions were made by Yeshua upon entrance of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, and they apply to all people. Here the emphasis is on the Likud Eitzim. He made as part of his conditions for taking over the land that people would be entitled to graze their animals in forests, even if the forest is privately owned. But that is the condition, that people will not be upset if others graze their animals in other people's forests. And malakta meitzin misadosin involves what we are talking about, the gathering of wood from other people's fields. So what's the special feature of a military camp when there is a previous takona involving all people? The Gemara answers. And the Gemara's answer is broken down into three parts. Three differences. Hosam, in the case of the takona of Yeshua, behizmi vehigi, which are thorns, hacha b'shar eitzim, the military feature entitles them to all kinds of woods, not just thorn-type woods, thorn-type growth. Inami, another difference, hosam b'mechubar and hacha b'tfushin. The entitlement of Yeshua is limited to things that are still attached, as opposed to things that the owner detached. That one would not be allowed to take, with the exception of the military camp. There, even if the owner of the fields had detached the wood in question, the military people are allowed to take it. With regard to everyone else, that would be a problem of gezel, where the owner had broken whatever wood it is. Maybe he left it in the field, but he broke it there for the purposes of eventually gathering it for fuel. So no one else is allowed to come and take it. However, we say that that the military people are entitled to take it. A third point of difference, inami, another possibility, hosam belachin hocha b'yavashin. The takon of Yeshua involved only fresh wood. Fresh wood is less desirable when it comes to fuel purposes. The takon for the machane, for the milchoma, is even yevashin, even dry wood, and certainly wet, fresh wood. Reb Yehuda ben Tema, Omer af chonin b'chol mokum v'mokum shenerogim sham nigborim. Here the Gemara focuses on the issue of the mace mitzvah umokum kuvrosu. People that are killed and they're found out in the outdoors, where are they buried? So Reb Yehuda ben Tema said that in a military situation where a soldier falls, there he is buried. The Gemara asks, Pshita, this is seemingly an obvious rule. Mace mitzvah who? It's a mace mitzvah, which we won't define yet. We'll just simply refer to it as a body that's found, and there's a mitzvah to bury him. Mace mitzvah koyma mekoyma. And the well-known halacha is that a mace mitzvah acquires the place that his body is found. And Rashi says that this, too, is one of the 10 takonas made by Yeshua. So what is special here that we're associating it with a military situation when it applies across the boards? The Gemara answers, lo tzricha, the military case is necessary. Afal gav, we continue at the top of Amud Beis, de is le koivrin. Literally, it's a body, it's someone, it's a person that's been killed that has those that will anyway tend to his burial. Rashi says it's a person that has heirs. He has yorshin. Desanya. In general, though, that's not the case. Ezu meis mitzvah. What is a meis mitzvah that we say that Yeshua made a takana that he's koinim koimai? That's called she'en lo kovrin. That's someone that there is no one around other than the one who found him, no one around to bury him. In other words, he doesn't have any heirs. He has no family. No one will tend to him. However, if you call out and say, hey, so-and-so is dead, you know, and they answer, yeah, okay, we're coming along, that kind of person, a person who has family, has heirs, he has yorshim, he is not classified as a meis mitzvah. Therefore, a body, a person found, ground like that, that has others, has family that will bury him, they will remove the body from where he is found. However, in the case of a military situation, even if the, we'll say the soldier has family, he is to be buried where he was killed. The Gemara asks a question, and this question lasts a number of lines. It takes in a Tanaic source. You can see we've marked it as such. Umeis mitzvah kona mekoimo, is that really so, that a body that's found, it is buried where it is found? The Ha-Tanya, we have a Tanaic source that will indicate otherwise. Hamotzi meis mutal besracha, one who finds a body, mutal is lying, besracha, besracha is a public thoroughfare, mefaneu liyamin asracha, o lismol asracha, you move him to the right or to the left of the road, sode bur v'sode nir, if on either side of the road you have these choices, an uncultivated field is a sode bur, sode nir is a plowed field, so mefaneu l'sode bur, you'll remove the body to the uncultivated field and bury him there. Sode nir v'sode zera, a plowed field versus a planted field. Mefaneu l'sode nir, you'll bury him, opt for the merely plowed field. Hayushteim nir shteim zeros shteim buros, if both fields on either side of the road are of the same nature, then mefaneu l'chol ruach shiyutzeh, then you remove him to whichever side you want. What's the point? The point is that here you have a mace mitzvah, it's a body that's found strewn out somewhere on a road, you remove him from where it is. So if you were to say, though, that mace mitzvah, kohen makoma, how do you move him? Omar Rav Bevai. So Rav Bevai explains, in general, if a mace mitzvah is found in some general location, you don't move him. However, here in this Tanaic source, hacha b'meis mutal al hametzar askinon. The mace is lying across a road. In other words, perpendicular to a road. And therefore, if someone were walking along this road, he will definitely encounter Tumas Mace. Included in the population are Kehanim that are not allowed to be Tomei Metamet Mesim, and people that are carrying Taharos, they might be carrying Trumos, things that must remain Tahar. So in such a case, even though it's a Mace that has no Kovrin, he is not to remain in a position where he will Metama everybody. Since there is permission granted to move him to the extent that he shouldn't be a cause of inevitable tumah, then we say so. Then move him to any side, to either side you like. In other words, once permission is granted to move him, so then we move him to wherever you like, wherever it's appropriate to bury him. And of course, not encounter inevitable tumah. But if it's not a body lying perpendicular to a road where it's inevitable that there will be tumah, so he is to be buried where he is found. There is, in the Pirush Chai, there's an illustration 248 which might be of assistance. We continue, Ufturin Mirchitzis Yadayim. The Mishnah made reference to the exemption of washing of hands. When we speak about washing of hands in a halachic context, we often think about the washing of hands before a meal of bread, and there is also the washing of hands following such a meal. The first is called Mayim Rishonim, the first waters, and the washing at the end of a meal before the Birchas HaMazon is referred to as the Mayim Achroinim, the last waters. So, Omar Abaye, Lo Shonu Elo Mayim Rishonim, the exemption mentioned in the Mishnah for the washing of hands in a military context is a reference to the initial washing before the bread. In other words, that washing we are going to waive. Avol mayim achronim choivo, however, when it comes to the final water, that is obligatory. Omar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, v'pnei ma omru mayim achronim choivo, why is such significance assigned to that mayim, that it's called obligatory waters? Nay, the answer is because shemelach stoimis yesh, there is a type of salt that comes from Sodom, and shemesama es oinayim, it's capable of inflicting blindness. Omar Abaye, umishtakha kekurta bakura. A very small amount of melach stomus is found in general mixed in with other less threatening type, we can say common salt. And it's described here by, as a kurta, we can say a pinch of salt in a kur. A kur is a very large amount. It's many pounds of salt, we'll say, just for illustration purposes. So it's a pinch of salt found in a barrel of salt, very small amount, and yet the halacha recognizes the danger it poses, as faint as it may be, as you can see from the statistics. Nevertheless, the halacha recognizes the danger, and that's why the mayim achronim, after a person ate his meal and handled salt, the fear is that there may be some of this melach stomus on his fingers, on his hands, and therefore the need for washing them at the end of the meal. There's a Tosfos at the top, Mayim Achronim Choyva. Tosfos says, Achshav lo noagu b'mayim achronim. Nowadays, and Tosfos, relative to the Gemara, represents a piece of work, we'll say a few hundred years after the completion of the Gemara. And Tosfos says, from Tosfos' standpoint, nowadays, and Tosfos lived in the common era, we'll say approximately in the 1100-1200 of the common era, so that's what the nowadays is. We don't practice Mayim Achronim. Number one, De'ein Melach Stomus Motzui Beinenu. This kind of salt is just not found amongst us. Inami lefishein onu regilim litbol etzboisenu b'melach achar achila. We don't have the custom that was practiced in the time of the Gemara, and that is to dip one's fingers in salt after a meal. In the time of the Gemara, there was this practice of tasting a little salt by dipping your fingers into salt and then putting it on your tongue after a meal. We don't do that, so the fear of one having salt on his fingers and then touching his eyes is, we'll say, remote at best. We continue in the Gemara. Omar le Rav Acho bre de Rovo le Rav Ashi. Rav Acho asks Rav Ashi, Kayo milcho mai. Kayo is to measure. One wasn't eating a meal, but he was measuring salt. Let's say he was measuring it for others. Does he have to wash his hands? Omar le, so Rav Ashi answers, Ha, lo mi baya. Rashi has a girsa here, kol shekein. Certainly, yes. If you use Rashi's girsa and impose it upon the Gemara, when the Gemara says, ha, lo mi baya, Rav Ashi's saying, well, what you're asking, that's not a question. That's so obviously necessary. There's so obviously a need for washing one's hands after you measure quantities of salt out to others. We said the military are exempt from needing to tithe the produce they buy from Amoratsim. We should mention, by way of background, that the Torah recognizes Rov Amoratsim Masrim Heim. The Torah, the Gemara says that the majority of ignoramuses of Amoratsim do practice tithing. What we are saying must be taken in the context of the Gemara, when there was some level of awareness, even on the part of the ignoramuses, they knew about tithing. If you are in a society where there is no knowledge of tithing whatsoever, so then you have to take this halacha in a different context. But Amoratsim, as the Gemara explains, are people that were suspect of not wanting to tithe, but they were aware of it. So the Torah, the Gemara, that is, mentions elsewhere that Rov Amoratsim Asrinheim, that from a Torah perspective, there is no need whatsoever to tithe produce that you buy from someone else, even if he is an ignoramus. However, there's a rabbinic prohibition or stringency applied to those who buy from Amoratzim that you must tithe. You must tithe that which you buy from them. So our source is telling us that that rabbinic stringency is not imposed in a military situation. Disnan, the Tanaic source says, Machilin eso aniyim demai v'asachsanya demai. One is entitled to feed the poor with demai, and one is entitled to feed the military, the achsanya, with demai. The achsanya, as far as who that is, we take a look at the Tosfos at the top. He mentions Rashi's pshat. Tosfos at the second Tosfos says ves achsanya demai pirusha kunshus v'Yisraelim heim. It's a reference to Jewish soldiers. Mihu b'Yerushalmi iko plukta. In the Yerushalmi, there is a machlokas. The iko demuki lo b'nochrim. There are those that learn that this heter applies even to Gentile soldiers. Uva filuhochi itzdurich lashminin demachino som demai. And even so, you say, well, if they're Gentiles, so they're not obligated anyway in eating tithe produce, so what difference does it make? It would be obviously allowed. No, it needs to be taught, because the tevel osir b'hano uvedemai ekelu. It is a tevel, untithed produce, in general, is something you're not allowed to benefit from, and giving something to a Gentile would provide you with benefit. He feels indebted to you. You're not allowed to derive any form of benefit if something is really untithed. Therefore, we have to tell you that even though you might be feeding it to Gentiles, since on a Torah level it's considered tithe, and you're dealing with a military situation, so you can give it to them and not worry about the rabbinic restriction. Omer Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, Tana, we have a brisa that features these halachas as a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai omrim ein machilin es aniyim demai v'safsanya demai. Beis Shammai says you cannot feed the poor nor the military people the demai. And the idea behind this is that one is not allowed to, let's say, pay his debts using demai. Beis Hillel says we do allow giving the demai to the poor and to the achsanya, to the military personnel. Umila arev. We said there is an exemption with regard to eruv. Amri debei Rabbi Yanai lo shanu elo eruvei chatzeros. The exemption of the Mishnah applies only to the joining together of two courtyards, and we illustrated that when we learned the Mishnah. Aval eruvei tchumin chayovin, but a different kind of eruv, which is called eruv tchum, that even the military would be obligated to practice. The Eruv Tchum, for those who have not heard of this in the past, so we'll just make a brief reference to what it is. On Shabbos, a person's location is determined by where he is at the entrance of Shabbos, and that it means that from where he is located, he is not allowed to walk more than 2,000 amos from that point. If he is in a city, for example, the entire city is considered his personal 4 amos, so he's allowed to walk around the city in all directions 2,000 amos. Let's say a person has some need in the course of Shabbos to be at a location more than 2,000 amos from where he is at the entrance of Shabbos, and his need is to be somewhere, let's say, 4,000 amos or less than 4,000 amos away. So by placing bread or food at a distance outside of where he is to be present there at the entrance of Shabbos, that food, the placing of food at that particular point will entitle him to another 2,000 amos beyond wherever he places the food. So if he wants to go, let's say, north of the city, he wants to go 3,500 amos north of the city, so what he has to do is, let's say, at a point beyond the city of 1,500 amos or more, up till 2,000 amos, he north of the city places food, and from that point he's entitled to go another 2,000 amas. So if he places his food 1,500 amas north of the city, from that point he can go another 2,000 amas with 3,500 amas in that direction. That's an Eruv Tchum. So let's say a soldier is in a situation like that, where at the entrance of Shabbos he has some need to go beyond his anticipated Shabbos location. So on Friday he has to place down the food to entitle him to go in that direction, the extended distance. So our Gemara is telling us, Bei Rav Yana is saying that the exemption does not apply, the exemption of Eruv doesn't apply to Eruv Tchumin. The Tani Reb Chiya, Loikin al Eruvei Tchumin Devar Torah. The Tanaic source taught by Reb Chiya says that we will impose lashing on someone who violates Tchum from a Torah perspective. In other words, Eruv Tchum is a Torah requirement. And we don't compromise when it comes to Torah-based halachas. As you may have noticed, the halachas we were dealing with as far as relaxation in the military context, those were rabbinic-based halachas, not Torah-based halachas. Maskif Lo Rebbe Yoinason. We have a marking here, which is explained on the side. First we have a nosei, which we alluded to already, ha'oinish ala oiver tchum Shabbos, the punishment for someone who violates tchum Shabbos, the 2,000 amah restriction, and the mivneh, this double underline, represents shlavim b'havonas kushis Rabbi Yonason. We're going to go through stages in trying to understand what his, Rabbi Yonason's, question is. So, number one, maskif lo Rabbi Yonason v'chi loikin alav she be'al. The pasuk says, al yetze ish mimukoyme b'yom ha'Shabbos. And that pasuk, al yetze ish mimukomo, is taken as a reference to the realm of Eruv Tchumin. One shall not leave his place on Shabbos. The pasuk doesn't begin with the word loy, it says al. And the question seems to be, a pasuk that is stated, albeit in the negative, and we know in general, loisas, says negative commands in the Torah that are violated result in lashing. However, Rabbi Yonason is asking, do we give lashes for those kind of negative commands that are introduced with the word al? Aleph Lamed? Maskif Rav Acha Bar Yankiv. Rav Acha is upset with the very question, and he asks back, Ela me'ata d'chtiv al tifnu ala oivis v'la yidoyne mochinami d'lo loki. There's a pasuk that forbids one to seek the advice or the counsel of these different soothsayers. They're known as Ovos and Yidoinim. Exactly what they are, so there's much more discussion on that topic in Maseches Sanhedrin. But the Torah forbids turning to these soothsayers, and there is an assumption here that there certainly is lashing for one that does turn to them. And the pasuk that forbids seeking their counsel is stated in the al fashion. Al tifnu, it says. There's a Tosfos that expounds a little bit on this topic, but we are not going to get into it right now. Nevertheless, the question is asked on Rabbi Yonason. Why are you bothered at all by the fact that there is malchus for tchum? Just because the pasuk begins with the word al is no reason for exemption from malchus. The Gemara explains, Rabbi Yonason hochi kashile. Rabbi Yonason, his question about the malchus is thusly to be understood. Lav shenitan lazhoras misas beizdin. Shabbos, the Shabbos violation alluded to in this pasuk, at this point, we have to caution that what we're saying is an explanation for this point in the Gemara. Things will change. But there is an assumption that the posuk of that we said, Ayetz Ish Mimukoymoi, is a posuk that serves as a source for the prohibition of carrying items from one domain to another, which we call the Iser Hoitzah. The word Al Yetzeh in the posuk sounds like Al Yotzi. There are no dots in the Torah. The Torah is written, it's written Yud Tzadi Aleph, so you could conceivably read the word as Al Yotzi, which would be the Iser Hoitzah. So there is a principle that when you have a negative command that carries the potential of a capital punishment, no lashes are meted out to such a violator, or regarding such a violation. So being that the pasuk serves as a basis for the Isur Hoitzah, and since the pasuk concerns, and again we emphasize at this point in our understanding, since the pasuk concerns the Isur Hoitzah, which carries with it a capital offense, even someone who didn't actually carry something out, but when he violated Tchum, which is also derived from this pasuk, he is violating something that has a connection to a capital punishment. Even though he per se is not going to receive the capital punishment, but it's connected to the realm of capital punishment. That's what is meant by the expression, it's a lav, a negative command, shenitan lazhoras misas basin. An azhora is a term referring to a negative commandment in the Torah, loisaseh. So it's a loisaseh that carries with it misas beizdin. And the rule says, v'chol lav shenita nazoros misas beizdin ein loikin olav. There is no malchus given to such type negative violations, negative commands. So how can the source say regarding eruv tchumen that's derived from a posuk that has a connection to the iser, an iser misas beizdin, how can there be malchus for it? Omar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says that the pasuk that we are relying on for the Isur Tchumen has nothing to do with the Isur Hoitzah. Miksiv al Yotzi. Does the pasuk say that? It doesn't say, it's not read like that. Al Yetzei Ksiv. The pasuk says that one cannot leave his location. And the pasuk is not a reference to the Isur Hoitzah. So true, Isur Hotzah, one who carries an item from one domain to another, from a private domain to a public domain, or vice versa, is guilty of a capital offense. But that is not what this pasuk is alluding to whatsoever. It's not referring to the Isur Hotzah, but rather to a separate Isur that's not punishable by Misas Beisdin. And since it's not punishable by court execution, it therefore does lend itself to Malkos. That is the conclusion of the first perek of Eruvin, and we now continue with the second perek. We will continue using the book of illustrations, the Pirush Chai, and you might find illustrations found on page 39 to be of benefit. As the perek's name indicates, Oisin Pas Libiros, we're dealing with a topic we have discussed in the past. The enclosure one is entitled to provide, to enclose a pit from which to draw water. Exactly what kind of pit, a freshwater spring, or a pit used for storing rain water, that we will touch upon in the course of the Gemara. The side of our Gemara features our topic heading, the Nosei, where we've written the following: Machlekes Rabbi Meir of Rabbi Huda b'Shiurim Akshurim LePasi Biros. We will see in this Mishnah a controversy between these Tanoim, Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Meir, concerning different aspects of distances and dimensions with regard to Pasei Biros. We've broken down the Mishnah using Roman numerals, and under our Mivneh heading, we indicate Shalosh Bavos Shel Mishnah Shebohen Chokin Atanoim. We'll see three sections of the Mishnah that highlight Tanaic controversy, different aspects, different topics under discussion, under Machlokes. If one doesn't remember what we have learned in the past regarding Pasei Biros, just a brief word about it. The biros here, the pits in plural, a pit is understood to be a reshus hayochid, being that we're working with pits that have a diameter of four tvachim. They measure 4 by 4 tvachim, and they have a depth of at least 10 tvachim. The surface of the pit in discussion is a public thoroughfare, giving it a Rishus HaRabim status. So without making any enclosure, it would be forbidden to draw water from the pit to the surface, because you're going from a private to a public domain. There is an allowance to have an enclosure formed by four right-angle boards with a height of 10 handbreadths, 10 tefachim, and the width of the right angles, each board that it forms the right angle, and there's two boards that are attached together, each board has a width of one amos, so 6 tefachim. So these right angles, which are also happen to be called diumdin, it's an expression we'll see later in the Gemara, these are positioned around the pit. As you can see in the illustration, the illustration is more elaborate. It makes reference to standard upright boards, simple boards as well, that we'll see in the discussion. What is of major concern to us in any Pasei Biros discussion is the gap between the boards. As far as what size gap will be allowed, that is a machlokes tanoim. In general, as we've seen in the past, we refer to certain types of gaps, assuming based on their size, as a pesach versus a pirza. A pesach is a legitimate opening. In the past, we've seen the idea that an opening is measured up till 10 amos. That means that if you have an enclosure, but it has a breach in it, the enclosure might be running for many, many hundreds of amos all around, and there's a breach in the enclosure of more than 10 amos, that ruins the entire enclosed area. Because once you go beyond 10 amos, it's no longer considered a pesach, but rather it's a pirza. Within the context of Pasei Biros, there's room for, say, another opinion, we'll say. And we can say, in general, these halachas of Pasei Biros are governed by the realm of halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, meaning there's an oral tradition that serves as the basis for these halachas, that even though regarding standard halachas of enclosure, we are being much more lenient here than we would in general. For example, in general, there's a rule that we've learned in the previous perek called Porutz Meruba Al Ha'oimed, where the opening is greater than that which is standing, is not considered a legitimate enclosure. Yet in the case of Pasei Biros, it is considered a legitimate enclosure, because we're dealing with an enclosure for a pit. And not for anything else, but for a pit. So in this context, we have certain leniencies. That having been said, we could turn now to the Mishnah. Oisin Pasin Lebiros. Pasin are boards. Boards are set up around biros, pits. Arba diumdin, nirin kishmoina divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Four diumdin. The word diumdin, you can see, is made of the word du, or in we say duo, two amudim. Amudim is the end of the word. Mem dalad yud met nun, indicating an upright, a pole or a board. So for our purposes, a diumid is our right-angle boards. Four right-angle boards are set around the pit, and they near in kishmoina. That means if you were to count each side, so since you're dealing with right angles, they're made of two sides, so four times two sides, they give the appearance of eight boards. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Meir Omer, around the pit, you have to set shmoina. Eight have to be set up near in Kishneim Osar. Arba Diumdin, Varba Pshutin. Rabbi Meir speaks about eight that appear as eight boards that appear as 12. How is that to be calculated? Eight that appear as 12. So there are four of them are double boards. That's Arba Diumdin. That accounts for eight. And another four, Arba Pshutim, that is what you see in the illustration that we made reference to before, illustration number one on page 39. We continue with measurements. Govon asorot tvachim, the height of the boards must be a minimum of 10 tvachim, 10 hand breaths. The roichvon shisha, the width of the boards, 6 tvachim. When you're dealing with the right angle boards, that means each side of the right angle is 6 tvachim. The uvyom, calls you the thickness, can be of negligible size. Now, we go to another point in the Mishnah that is a machloikis. And this concerns the gaps between the boards. Uveinehem kimloi shte revokis shel sholosh sholosh bokor, divrei Rebbe Meir. The gaps are made of shte revokos. A revoka is a brace that holds together animals. It holds them together in position. So the gap is made of two revokos, each brace holding three animals, three cows. So, according to Rebbe Meir, the gap would be measured in terms of the width of six animals. This can be seen on in illustration number three. In illustration number three, you're actually getting the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda, who's coming up now. Rebbe Yehuda Omer, he says, "Shel arba arba kshuros velo mutoros." The braces hold each one four animals, so it's two braces of four animals, a total of eight animals, and tied and not, that's kshuros velo mutoros, and not untied. Achas nichneses v'achas yoitzes. The position of the animals is the one brace of animals has their heads facing inwards and one has their heads facing outwards. All of this you can see in the illustration on page 40, illustration 3. Mutter lehakriv lebe'er, in illustration 4, he's trying to illustrate the idea of having the right angles moved in toward the pit as you can move them in. Ubavach te para roishav ruba befnim v'shoisa, provided that the cow's head and most of its body are within the enclosure. Illustration 5. Mutter, we continue at the top of Daf Yud Ches. Mutter, we say, laharchik kol shehu. You can move the boards outwards as much as you like. Ubulvad shiarbe bepasim, provided the further out you move the boards, you're adding boards in the larger gap that's formed so as to make sure that the gap never exceeds the maximum allowed gap. Rebuta Omer ad base sosayim. Rebuta says that the amount that you can move outwards shall not exceed an enclosed area measuring base sosayim. Base sosayim would be 5,000. It's 5,000 square amos. It's an area measuring 50 by 100. So it's 5,000 square amos is the limitation. Omru lo omru base sosayim elo le gino le karpif. The limitation of an enclosure of base sosayim is true. There is such a limitation. That's only when you're dealing with an area that's called not hukaf ledira, that has no dwelling aspect to it. For example, a gina is a garden. People don't live in gardens, and a karpif is an open area where there is no dwelling. Aval im hoya dir osar o mukzo chotzer. If it's any of these kind of areas that are being enclosed, there are four examples here, and without getting into the examples per se, they are classified as hukaf ledira. So afilu beis chameshes kurin, afilu beis asora kurin muter, even much larger areas, 5 kur, 10 kur, 1 kur is an area of 30 sa'a. We discussed before an area of 2 sa'a. So he is saying here that if it's an area that's called hukaf ledira, an area that's called an area of dwelling, and the term dwelling is not limited to a house with bedrooms in it, but it has a much more expanded idea to it, as the Mishnah indicates. Such an area is not limited. Umuter laharchi kol shuvat shiarbe pasim. You can keep expanding as much as you like, provided you're constantly adding boards so as to ensure that the openings in the expanded enclosure don't exceed the, we'll say, the allowed space. We saw before the allowed space measured in terms of six animals, which is really 10 amos. And we saw another opinion, but that other opinion happened to be Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda is restrictive altogether. He doesn't allow for expansion, unlimited expansion. So that even though Rabbi Yehuda has a leniency with regard to the allowed opening size, he has a stringency with the regard to how much area can be enclosed in the Pasei Biros. The examples that the Mishnah mentioned, deer, sar, Rashi explains what these are, the deer and the sar, the muktze or the chotzer. For our purposes, we are just going to classify them as something called mukaf ledira. And what we have to, most importantly, we must point out that a bore of water, a pit of water, is called l'shein dira. It's called a dwelling relevant area, because the water in question is something that people also can drink from. And as Rashi says, Rashi, right before his Gemara commentary, the last two lines of his Mishnah commentary, we've dashed underlined it. So reading from those lines, he says there, since the water in the pit is fit for people as well, for their drinking, so it's called Hukaf Ladira. It's a domicile-related enclosure. At this point in the Gemara, you can see that we have diamonds, and we have a topic heading on the side under the Nosei heading. We've written, Masnisen dekotoni shoysin pasin biros. Our Mishnah that says that you can make these the board enclosure for pits, mashma delo kishitas Hananya Rabbi Kiva Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. We have an impression at first glance that the Mishnah does not conform to any of these tanoim. And under the Mivneh, the diamonds represent shalosh nisyonos loimar shemeshnosenu eino kemo, and there are three attempts to say that the Mishnah is not like. And we mentioned the names. And at each point in the Gemara, though, the Gemara will say, no, our Mishnah could be like them. And we'll have to resolve our Mishnah with their comments as they appear in the Gemara. Initially, in the first section of the Gemara, you'll see a double underline appear. This highlights two, which Aleph and Beis, you'll also see appearing in our markings. This shows or refers to two lishonos, beis lishonos benisona rishon, lomar de eno kechanana, two versions of the first attempt to say that our Mishnah is not like Hananya. So as we turn to the Gemara, let's see what Hananya said and see how it appears to be different from our Mishnah. Of course, anticipating that the Gemara will resolve the Mishnah with Hananya. The Gemara, Lemo Masnisen Delo Kichananya. Let us say our Mishnah, which allows Pasin for a Be'er. A Be'er is a live spring. Our Mishnah allows that. Setting up Pasin for a Be'er is unlike Hananya. Disanya, the source says, Oisin Pasin Lebor V'chavolim L'shayora. V'chananya Omer Chavolin Lebor Avolo Pasin. There's reference to a rope enclosure. Also, this is something we discussed in the previous perek. We don't have to emphasize rope enclosures right now, but the source tells us that boards are set up around a bore, a pit, and ropes around a caravan, a shayora. And Hananya, who we have to emphasize, says, Chavolin lebor avolo pasin, that for pit enclosures, you can use ropes, but not pasin. Well, so we dashed under lo pasin. Our Mishnah says oisin pasin. So our Mishnah is not like Hananya. The Gemara responds, afilu tema Hananya. Our Mishnah could be like Hananya. Bor l'chud, be'er l'chud. There are two kinds of depressions, if you will. One is a pit, and the other is a spring, a live spring that's also, we'll say, in a pit form. It's dug out, but at the bottom of this digging is a live spring. That's called a be'er. Hananya, he prohibits the use of pasin for a boar, but he doesn't prohibit the use of pasin for a live spring. Our Mishnah spoke about pasin for a live spring. We should look at the Rashi a couple lines down. Bor, mayim mechunas, means gathered water. The avidi de paski, gathered water is something that's finite. In other words, it once you draw all the water, there's no more water left. It's simply a storage pit for water. Umishum hochi also Chananya, and that's why Chananya is restrictive with the allowance of this leniency that we refer to as pasin for a bor. The zimnin de paski maya, sometimes the water is actually, the supply is exhausted. Ubatli mechitzis, and then there's no need, and there's the relevance of the mechitza becomes unnecessary. Velohutra pasigros elomimeyan, the whole allowance, the leniency of pasigros is for the water, shel behemos elirugolin, for the animals, for giving to drink the animals of the people coming on the Aliyas HaRegel, we'll call the holiday pilgrimage, three times a year. So the boar is not entitled to the leniency of pasi biros. However, a be'er, Rashi says, mayim chayim, of live spring, constant flow of water, will be rosa masnisin, and that is what our Mishnah is referring to. The Mishnah used the word biros, midelo katoni boros, from the fact that the Mishnah did not use the word boros. Boros is the pool of bor. Bor is the gathered water as opposed to the live spring. So therefore we know, b'mayim chayim komar, our Mishnah is talking about a live spring. So now, at this point, what have we said? That our Mishnah can be authored by Chananya. True, Chananya had a restriction regarding pasim, but that was only with regard to a storage pit of water. No restriction, namely the allowance of pasin, would be acceptable by Chananya with regard to a live spring, which was the topic of our Mishnah. Continuing in the Gemara, Iko Diamri, a second version, Midalo Kotoni, from the fact that in presenting Chananya, it does not say, Chananya Oimer Oisin Chavolin Lebor Upasin Lebe'er. Chananya didn't say that. Michlau de Chananya, it must be that according to Chananya, loishno bor velo shno be'er, there is no distinction between these two kinds of pits, chavolin in pasin lo. Only ropes are considered at a proper enclosure, not the boards. Now we dashed on the pasin lo, so lemo masnisin de loke Chananya. Based on that, should we say the Mishnah is not like Chananya? Not so. Afilu teimo Chananya. We can say that our Mishnah is like Chananya. Lemai deko amar Tanakama ko mahadar lei. In Chananya's original statement, he was simply answering tit for tat. In other words, the Tanakama spoke about the permission of pasin for a boar. Chananya responded, no pasin for a boar. But Chananya was not coming to exclude the possibility of a be'er, of pasin for a be'er. And our Mishnah spoke about a be'er, a live spring. Chananya has no objection to the pasin for a be'er. So our Mishnah can be like Chananya. Lemo masnisin de lo k'Rabbi Akiva. So again, same style Gemara. Let us say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva, this non. We have a Tanaic source, it's three lines, and this source you can see is authored by Rabbi Akiva, his name is underlined at the end of the source. So what does he say? Echod be'er harabim, ubor harabim, uber hayochid. Three examples. A live spring that is owned by the public, a public live spring. A public water storage hole, a public bor. And a private live spring, oisin lohen pasin. We allow the use of pasin, avol bor hayochid. When it comes to a privately owned a storage pit of water, oisin loy mechitzu v'asor tfochim, then a proper fence of 10 tfochim of height around it must be made. Otherwise, we don't allow chasin for a bor hayochid. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva allows pasin for in three of four cases. One of the cases, by the way, is the bor harabim. Ve'inlu hochokotani, however, our Mishnah, in contrast, lebiros, it speaks about pasin for biros in the boros lo. The Mishnah makes allowance for pasin in the context of live springs, not for pits of storage water. Rabbi Kiva is more lenient. He says pasin are allowed for a bor harabim. So it would seem that our Mishnah, which represents a greater stringency than Rabbi Kiva, hence our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara responds, Afilu Temo Rabbi Akiva, our Mishnah could be authored by Rabbi Akiva. And the purpose of our Mishnah is not to exclude Bor Harabim. Rather, Be'er Mayim Chayim de Psikole, Lo Shna de Rabim, Lo Shna de Yochid Katoni. The Mishnah, we'll say, took the easy route. Namely, the Mishnah taught Be'er Mayim Chayim, it's a live spring. The Psikole means it's something that's unqualified. I don't want to say across the boards because the pun might be too enticing, but that is the case. The Be'er, the live spring, is something that's unqualified, no difference whether it's public or private. So that's what the Mishnah concerns itself with. Katoni means the Mishnah teaches that. Bor mechunasim, the bor of the pit of gathered waters, of storage water pit, delo psikole, that is something that is qualified, namely it's not unqualified. Simply said, it's qualified. It's the use of pasin for a storage pit of water is only if it's a public bor. So, lo katoni, the Mishnah doesn't bother dealing with something like a bor which is qualified, which depends on whether it's private when it's not allowed versus public when it would be allowed. So, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, it could be authored by Rabbi Kiva, then the Mishnah simply doesn't mention anything with regard to boros, not because it's coming to exclude bor harabim from pasim. We continue. Lemo masnisa de lo krivita ben bova. Maybe we should say, let us suggest that our Mishnah is not like him. This not Rabbi ben bova omer. Ein oisin pasin elo leber harabim bilvad. Rabbi Yehuda says we don't allow the use of pasim except for a public live spring. A very limited allowance for pasim. Ve'ilu hochokotoni, rather, as opposed to our Mishnah, says lebiros, we use pasim. We allow this leniency of this right angle enclosure for biros. The term biros is taught in the plural, lo shna de rabim ve lo shna de yochid. We dash on the yochid, showing the point of contrast between what our Mishnah suggests and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bova. He said pasin are allowed only for rabim. Our Mishnah will allow, is more lenient, that allows pasin not only for a bear of rabim, but for a private bear as well. The Gemara responds, Afilu Temo Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, our Mishnah could be authored by Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, my biros. What does biros in the Mishnah mean? Biros the Alma, it means public owned springs in general. So the plural term in the Mishnah simply means the general realm of public, and we emphasize of public springs. However, a private spring is something that our Mishnah might very well prohibit, just like Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. We saw the reference to the right angle, called the right angle boards, and the term for the right angle boards is diumdin. The word diumdin we saw on the first line of the Mishnah, Arba Diumdin. And here the Gemara asks, what does that word mean? My Diumdin. So, Omer of Yumiyaban ben Elazar, Diu Amudim. Two boards. Two Amudim are poles or boards. this particular question serves as a lead-in to the next Gemara, and on the side we have our Mivneh heading, the bow tie shape, and this marking lasts quite a while. It goes till Yud Tes Omid Aleph. What does this highlight? Sidra Shel Meimro Shel Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ben Elazar, a series of Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ben Elazar comments. And Mirz Hashem, in our next year, so we will pick up with this marking and this introduction. So with that, we conclude our shiur for today.